Yeah, my name is John Winkowski, and my research in the Chehalis that I'm presenting today is focused during the summer months specifically, and I'm going to be talking about patterns of fish habitat and temperature in different sub-basins of the Chehalis River. I'm going to really be summarizing the results at a high level, so if you're interested in reading in more detail, the report for this work is available online in that web link there. If you Google it, you'll find it probably. So I'm going to be talking about the original goal of this work, the methods that we use to collect the data, the results, sort of put them in a context of restoration, and then I'm going to be focusing on the next steps that we're using these riverscape data to really further increase our understanding of summer fish distributions throughout the basin. So the original goal of the study sort of stemmed from the idea that summer rearing habitat for juvenile salmon and steelhead was limited in the Chehalis River. It's warm, the flows are low, and we didn't really know a whole lot about the distributions of juvenile salmon and steelhead in the basin prior to this work. So the goal for this study was to understand and describe fish habitat and temperature patterns during the summer low flow period. So we selected six sub-basins to carry out this work, and we chose them kind of to capture a broad spatial coverage of the basin. We conducted surveys in the Upper Chehalis sub-basin, the Newaukum, both the South Fork and the North Fork, the Satsup Basin, the East Fork and the West Fork, and the West Fork Hum Tulip, so sort of spanning the basin there. And we also did these surveys where we anticipated that the channel size would support summer rearing of juvenile salmonids. And so as a result, our results are sort of limited to those types of habitats. In other words, we weren't up in the really high gradient tributaries or anything like that. We conducted riverscape surveys, and basically what those are spatially continuous surveys. So starting at one point in the river, and working your way continuously down 20, 30, 40, 50 kilometers and mapping the river that way. We tried to start these surveys at similar elevations so that we could sort of have a comparison across sub-basins where we could. And we collected data on habitat, temperature, and fish in these survey areas. And we surveyed about a total of 380 kilometers during the course of the 4 summers where we carried out this work. I'm jumping right into results here. Among survey areas, the vast majority of habitat that we observed was pool riffle, which is characterized by alternating pools and riffles and gravel bars, typically cobble gravel substrate. This is the type of channel type that most of the juvenile salmonids were rearing in the survey areas. Within survey areas, we had some upstream and downstream patterns. For example, the substrate coarseness in upstream areas tended to be more coarse, more cobble, more boulder, and as you move down the river, the substrate became more fine, more sand, gravel, and silt, as you'd expect sort of along a river gradient. We also identified some unique habitats in our survey areas. For example, the headwaters of the East Fork Satsup, we classified as sort of this spring-fed headwater channel type, where it was uniquely low elevation, low gradient, and very cold compared to the other survey areas. In the West Fork Hum Tulips, there was both a high density of large woody debris, but also quite a bit of large woody debris. So this is one of our 6-foot field technicians there standing in front of a old growth tree that's fallen into the wetted channel, and you can see some old growth in the riparian there in the Hum Tulips, and we didn't really see this at all in any other survey area. So it was a unique finding there. This figure is showing mean August temperatures in our survey areas. So we have temperature on the y-axis, elevation, low elevation and high elevation on the x-axis, And each line here represents one of those sub-basins that I mentioned we surveyed. And what I want you to see here really is that in all the sub-basins, there was an upstream-downstream temperature gradient, which is what you might expect in a rain-fed system during the summer months. And so in upstream areas, the temperature was cool, but then as you move downstream, the temperature warmed up quite a bit in each survey area. But among survey areas, at any given elevation, there was quite a bit of variability in temperature. So at, you know, this 150 to 200 meter elevation range, the upper Chehalis was, you know, 3 to 4 degrees Celsius warmer than, say, the West Fork Hum Tulips here. And then also some more temperature diversity. You had sort of the loner East Fork Satsup over here, sort of a unique low elevation, as I was saying, very cold basin relative to the other survey areas. And even, you know, within the Satsup Basin at these elevations in the West Fork, some of these temperatures in the East Fork were, you know, 5 degrees colder at the same elevation. So even a lot of diversity within the Satsup Subbasin, but also within the Chehalis Basin as a whole in terms of mean August temperatures. So jumping into the fish species diversity, we counted about 850,000 fish, 13 species, including coho, and these are, I'm referring to juveniles. We did see other adults, but talking about juveniles here. Coho, chinook, omicus, we saw a couple bull trout, mountain whitefish, northern pike minnow, redside shiner, and dace. Also large-scale sucker, three-spined stickleback, and some non-native species, including smallmouth bass and sunfish. It's important to note that our technique was limited in terms of seeing some other species, like juvenile chinook, as Mara mentioned. By the time we did these surveys, they had already been expected to leave the river by that point. And also we were snorkeling, so counting benthic-oriented species like lamprey or sculpin was not possible. And the take-home here was that juvenile salmonids, mostly coho and omicus, and cyprinids, the pike minnow shiner and dace, represented about 98% of the total fish that we observed in our survey areas. And so we kind of lumped those juvenile salmonids into a group and the cyprinids into a group to describe the fish assemblages along our survey areas. And what we found was an upstream-downstream pattern again in fish assemblages, where these dark blue areas represent our juvenile salmonids. And as you move downstream in some of these survey areas, the color turns light blue, which is where we saw the highest numerical dominance of cyprinid species. And really what we were seeing was sort of this species replacement pattern in the river, where the upstream locations were dominated by juvenile salmonids. They were high elevation, cool, coarse substrate, often more wood. And then they were replaced in a downstream direction by cyprinid species. Again, those pike minnow, redside shiner, and dace. And then as you moved even further downstream, we started picking up our non-native species. And we didn't go too far downstream, so our surveys don't have a lot of information regarding the main stem distribution of non-native species. The pattern of salmonid cyprinid replacement in coastal Pacific rivers is fairly common where these species are. And there's evidence that they compete, and the salmonids and the cyprinids, and that temperature mediates the outcomes of these competitive interactions. So in warm conditions, cyprinids can outcompete juvenile steelhead, redside shiner, particularly in these studies. And in cold conditions, the steelhead can outcompete the shiner. So there's some temperature-mediated competition there that could be influencing interactions in the river where we observe these fish. To put these results in the context of restoration, we see that broad-scale temperature patterns determine summer fish distributions. A limited portion of the watershed really has the suitable environment for the rearing of juvenile salmon and steelhead. And those locations tend to be headwaters, and I'm using headwaters sort of loosely, sort of the upstream portions of these sub-basins. So we should protect those cool water areas, maintain shading and groundwater inputs. These areas are not, you know, pristine. They have the landscape, it has legacy effects of, you know, logging and splash damming, and also large flooding events that have altered the river. So restoring the processes in these sections, restoring channel complexity with wood and connections for fish passage would be important for juvenile salmonids. And another important, interesting note is that in the sub-basins where we saw a wide range of temperature diversity, it was associated with a high level of native fish diversity. So it's a different perspective when you're considering abundance of a species versus fish species diversity in general. I'm going to move on to the next steps that we're using these riverscape data to move forward. So it's sort of a stepwise process here. The first thing we're using these riverscape data for is to develop a basin-wide temperature model. And with that basin-wide temperature model, develop some fish temperature relationships and ultimately predict summer fish distribution throughout the basin where our riverscape data, within our riverscape data bounds in terms of elevation and stream size. And so all of this is using information that we collected within the Chehalis Basin. So the first step is developing this temperature model, and there is a basin-wide temperature model available in the form of the Norwest Stream Temperature Model, which is a very large model, extremely useful for understanding current and future temperature scenarios broadly used throughout the Pacific Northwest. The model is framed at a regional scale, so quite large. So when you look into a watershed and see the data points that it uses to predict, sometimes there's not a whole lot of information that's actually coming from within the basin. So these are the points that the Norwest model draws on within the basin to make predictions. So most of the information to predict temperature in the Chehalis is coming from outside of the Chehalis. And what I was saying before is that the Chehalis is quite diverse in terms of temperature. So our first question was, well, how well does Norwest predict temperature in the Chehalis using the observed points that we had for our sort of collective research in the basin, including the riverscape? And then does adding our data improve the prediction? So we had an additional about 100 sites in addition to the Norwest, and then we have some more coming, thanks to Nick, in the summer. And so when we look at the observed temperatures that we had in the Chehalis on the y-axis versus what Norwest predicts, the predictions are off this kind of perfect prediction line, one-to-one here. Our observed temperatures were consistently warmer than what Norwest predicts. And so we went ahead and ran an updated model with our temperature points and developed new predictions. And compared to the Norwest predictions, the updated model was, you know, much tighter. Our predictions kind of hug that perfect, or that one-to-one line, pretty well. So we'll be using those data moving forward with our next steps, which is to develop these fish temperature relationships. And these figures here are fish occupancy and density as a function of mean August temperatures for coho 0+, trout 0+, and steelhead 1+. And if we focus first on occupancy, what we can see is that these fish occupy habitat across the temperature range. For trout and steelhead, their occupancy is a little more sensitive as temperature increases. But when we look at the density plots for these species, what we see is there's sort of a window of temperature that supports the highest densities of these fish species. So if the temperature is both too cold or too warm, the habitat is not supporting as high density as that narrow window of temperature that that the data is showing here.
Could you tell us what's on the x-axis? I don't have.
Yeah, sorry, those are mean August temperatures.
Just identify a few of the values there.
Oh, sorry, 10 degrees Celsius to 22. And so that's the range of temperatures we observed in our survey areas. Yep, the middle is about 14 to 15 degrees, or 14 to 16 degrees there. So the final step is to develop this summer fish distribution model using all these data that we collected within the basin, which is currently in progress. And so we've observed with our Riverscape data about 271 river kilometers. And when we can predict about 800 additional kilometers that are within the same elevation and stream size range as our Riverscape data were collected. And then these results that are informed again by data that we collected within the basin can be used to compare to existing models that are planning restoration. So that's it, and thank you. And I wanna thank field crews, Weyerhaeuser, Green Diamond, Rainier, Panesco, Tree Farm, and everyone else that helped with this work. So thanks.
So timeline on completing the summer distribution model?
Yeah, so that was in my notes, I didn't say it. June 2019. Yeah, so they're relative densities, yeah.
And so the fish model is going to be based entirely on temperature. There wouldn't be any other attributes included in there, like gradient, large wood amounts?
They are, yeah. We are going to include habitat and or landscape variables in the model. Yeah.
So John, in your discussion of the Riverscape, you talked about the different species of fish you found. You mentioned bull trout. Were you morphologically able to distinguish it from char?
No. Well, they were large adults in the Upper West Fork cum tulips, and
but they're not dollies.
No, I don't. I mean, I don't think so.
So this yeah. was visual underwater.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do that. But that so there is a question mark on that certainly. Thank you, John.
Yeah. Thanks.